Welcome to Cloudlandia.
Mr. Sullivan.
Ah, Mr. Jackson.
Welcome to Cloudlandia.
So much to report on.
Oh, my goodness. I know. What a whirlwind adventure, huh? You've been out in Phoenix and back?
Yeah, we did. We got back last night, arrived at 8 o'clock, and had a very enjoyable hour and 10-minute wait for our baggage.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. So all the veteran skilled baggage handlers, I think, use the COVID opportunity to retire, I think.
Okay. Oh, man. And all the low seniority people get Saturday night.
It's very interesting because the baby boomers are the biggest generation in the history of the world, you know, for a particular country. And they're all retiring at the same time. You know, they have 40 years of skills and 40, sometimes 50 years of skills in particular areas. And they're, you know, they either took early out, you know, they got an offer from big institutions, especially like Air Canada being one of the big institutions, and they had to cut. They had to cut money, so I think they cut money by buying out all their skilled people. Okay, and there's some advantages to that. You temporarily save money, but there's some disadvantages to that. You permanently tick off a lot of passengers.
Well, it's true with their core value, though, right? Which is, of course,
we're not happy
you
until
identified. We're not happy until you're not happy. That's exactly right. So it's right on brand.
Yeah. And, you know, no announcement or anything. And if you go up and talk to the people, they say it's coming, you know.
It's coming.
Which is, I guess, reassuring if you had doubts about that.
I believe Toronto may be. No, I'm going to take that back because if you've landed in Heathrow. You also have, it seems like there's a, you know, the longest walk I've ever had in inside of an airport has been either in Heathrow or at the far international gates of Terminal 3 in Toronto.
Well, that was the problem. Our plane came right in where all you have to do is get up to the higher level. We were right at the escalator down to customs and immigration. So no, we were at the baggage, you know, whatever.
That's
they
the problem.
Things that go around. We were there really early. And so anyway, but I practiced my mantra, you know, if this didn't bother me, what would I be doing?
Right.
And I practiced it probably 40, 50 times.
Oh, that is so funny. That's where TikTok comes in handy. It'll just let the time go by quickly for you.
Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah. That's funny. Our you know, willingness to be okay with waiting for stuff.
I think it's going to be the norm, that one. You know, like, I don't think there's ever going to be as efficient and as fast moving year in the future as we had in 2019. I think that's an hour.
You mean in terms of airline? Do you know, when I was traveling the last year that Joe and I were doing, Joe Stump, when we were doing the big real estate seminars, we were doing a big event every month. So we were traveling somewhere. I really honed the friction-free travel program system down to as good as you could get it without taking the next step to private flight, private travel. Mm-hmm. And I would have, because of that was one of the things that I hated, with the uncertainty of waiting for your bags, especially when you're coming home. It's such a, you know, thing. So I got into this routine of shipping my bags. And I would get, you know, I had a checklist of everything that I would need for the trip. Courtney, our assistant, would pack everything for me. And you know, the day before or 2 days before I was flying out, they would come and pick up my bag right at the house. And we had prearranged with the hotel to let them know to expect it. So it would always arrive the day before I did. And when I would go to the airport, I had arranged, I would either, you know, valet park at the Hyatt Hotel, which was attached to the airport in Orlando, mm-hmm. just go up the elevator. I had the clear pass at the time, which was new, to be able mm-hmm. to skip the security line and go right to the lounge and then get right on the plane, walk off, get in a prearranged limo and go to the hotel. And when I got to the hotel, my room was ready and my bag was up in there waiting for me. That was like the friction-free way of the travel for me. It was fun because that was kind of a routine that I would go through on Make My Life Better Day. I would have ways where I'm looking for the friction in my life and looking for ways to doing an experience transformer kind of thing on it. And so I was pretty happy with that. So the last couple of years that we did the main events were really, they were great. Travel is such a cool thing to not ever have to touch my bag. You know, I had a little kit that I would put together. I got a separate laptop and power cords and things that I would want to have in the, you know, at the main event, and that would travel with the equipment, you know, for putting on the show kind of thing. So that would be there for me too. So I didn't even have to carry my laptop. It was great.
Well, I've sort of done it the other way. I've just eliminated the need for travel.
Me too. I love it. You know, this is so,
yeah, I
so
mean,
good.
The one particular thing that I eliminated was any need for travel for marketing or sales purposes. And our results from Zoom are easily 50% better. You know, a two-hour Zoom session. And the neat thing about it is that you get people from all over the world to come to the session, where if you, in the old days, you went someplace, but the only people you got were people who lived nearby. And so the quality of people is much higher in terms of, and the nice thing about Zoom, you know, they didn't come for the food.
Well, you know, that's so true. You know, a couple of minutes before we got on the podcast, one of my clients and friends, Jose Camacho, he texted me and said, "Dean, I'm starting Strategic Coach Virtual in November." And that was, you know, he's a guy, he lives in Miami, but travels often to, his family is from Colombia. And he travels back and forth. He's got young kids and, you know, running a business and going back and forth and all that stuff. So being able to do it virtual was an option for him. But I thought that was funny that you mentioned that, because that was his text. "Good morning, Dean. I'm starting Virtual Coach in November. Thanks to you."
Yeah.
Clapping hands. That's good.
Yeah. I mean, we go to London, like we have the London trip, but it's mainly to see our team. You know, during the COVID years, there was no going back and forth. Mm-hmm. And so we went, you know, and then we had the day where I did a mini workshop, 2-3 hours in the morning for all clients. And then in the afternoon, I did it for, let me see, if I got the order right there. No, in the morning I did it for all the clients who are in 10 times who make the trip to North America. Mm-hmm. And in the afternoon I did it for everybody. You know, it would be, you know, all the British clients who have British coaches. So I did that.
Yeah.
But that was more, you know, meeting your friends, you know,
a meetup,
and you know, and we had, you know, two full dinners with our team and coaches, met the coaches, and yeah, it was cool. Yeah, it
That's
was just
great.
And
I miss London. Like, I do miss, I mean, I miss Toronto and London. I would have that nice little summer swing of being in Toronto, London, Amsterdam. We do three event, you know, back to back. So I do.
Well, you're missing probably the warmest November weather in history, We got off the plane last night. We got out of the terminal last night. It was 72 degrees Fahrenheit here in Toronto.
Wow, that's great.
Oh, it's really nice. It's really
a heat wave.
It is. Yes, that would legitimately qualify by November in Canada standards as a heat wave. Yeah. But immediately I was seeing people saying, this is just proof, that the cataclysm is approaching. I said, no, it's just a nice week in November.
That's always been the big, I don't know. I've had, whenever anybody brings up global warming, always what I just can't get past, Dan, is that if we were once in an ice age, like I think the consensus is that we were, I can't get past how did we warm up to current temperatures without the aid of combustible
energy? Without global warming.
How did we do it? I mean, there's global warming, obviously. I would call that pretty significant global warming. But how does it happen without the aid of these evil fossil fuel burners?
The evil must go much more deeply into human beings themselves. We must be fundamentally evil.
Fundamentally, I mean
Well, it's really interesting because there's clear evidence now, because they brought, people brought up the topic for their, their own mission, which is to get rid of the fossil fuel based economy. But it was very clear evidence for the 300 years, 1100 to 1400 D, so half a millennium ago, that it was at least 1 or 2 degrees Fahrenheit warmer in England than at any time since then. There was a cooling period that went from the 1300s to the 1600s. And the temperature dropped very significantly. And we're only recovering from that. We haven't gotten back to the way it was in the 1300s. It's called the medieval warming period. But the history is up and down, going back, hundreds of thousands of years. But the interesting thing and this is the crux of why their contention about carbon dioxide is false, and that is there's only evidence that the temperature warms, and then anywhere from 40 years later to 400 years later, the amount of CO2 goes up in the atmosphere, which would indicate to me that it's the warming that increases the CO2, not the other way around. And if that's true, then there is no basis for the entire environmental movement. But my feeling is that it's an industry into itself right now, so that it has detached itself from actual scientific evidence.
That is something. That's dangerous when you start comparing things. I forget what the argument was. There was some thing that was trying to make those parallel correlations again, but turn it into causation. It was something to do with Roe v. Wade. What year was Roe v. Wade?
1973.
Okay. So somebody was making some correlation between Roe v. Wade and some metric that was, this was causing that. And someone else in a debate did the same thing. Because when you show graphs and you show the correlating rise of things, you see this went up and this went up. Therefore, this caused this to go up. Somebody did the same thing because I believe that the Big Mac was also invented in 1973. And they showed the popularity of the Big Mac completely correlating with the same thing that they were trying to link to Roe v. Wade. And so it was just a great illustration of
That's kind of funny.
It was the Big Mac, you know?
I think you and I are pretty creative people, you know, and we can things that other people can connect. But so far, since you've put those two things, Roe versus Wade and the Big Mac, my creative brain just hasn't found any connection between those two.
And I wish
maybe
I
need a third one. We need the triple.
We need the third thing, but it was something that had gone up as a direct cause of that. Yeah.
Well, I think it's the fact that the Cleveland Indians haven't won a World Series.
That could be.
Since 1973.
I think it's the Cleveland Guardians now, Dan. Come on.
Cleveland Guardians, you know.
That's right.
That's funny in itself because I do know people who are avid Cleveland fans, baseball fans, and they were just sickened, you know, when they changed their name. And they said, what do you think about that? And I said, I think if you have a name change like that, the way to make it acceptable really quickly is to win the World Series.
Yes. That's true.
I said, you know, I mean, and they actually surprised everybody because they have the young, you know, I follow these things, so I know a few facts about it. And they actually were predicted to finish fourth in their division, and they won the division, and they won the first level of the playoffs, and they took the Yankees pushed the Yankees right to the limit before they won, but I would have enjoyed it if the fact that they had gone all the way and won the World Series. I said, yeah, you know, that's how you establish your brand real quick. You know, I mean, if you have a change of name or something like that, yeah. Just win the big prize. Everybody says,
exactly.
Yeah. And
yeah, right.
Then people would say, well, it kind of makes sense, you know, that the previous name wasn't a World Series name, but this new name, you could clearly say Guardians, you know, Guardians. You can really, I mean, we knew it that when they changed that name to the Guardians, it would give them extra motivation. It would give them, you know, there would be power to it and everything like that, you know.
Oh, that's so funny.
Yeah.
So what were the highlights of your trip? Were you down just for event?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. We went down for a couple of days just to chill out. You know, we were there on Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday. We went out to dinner with friends that we know there, and our team came down. So we had three team members for the booth. Mm-hmm. So they came down and we had lunch, and Jeff Madoff was down doing interviews and videos. And so we went, one of the evenings, we went out to dinner with him and caught up on the progress with his play. So they have a firm date now in June of next year in Chicago for 12 weeks. And
wow, very exciting.
Yeah. Now, this is Chicago's the jumping off point. I mean, if you do really well in Chicago, then New York is next.
Take it on the road. And, yeah.
Yeah. Well, the New York, you'd really want New York or London. And London is incredibly cheap right now because just during normal times, that's a funny word, but let's say 5 years ago, if you took an American play and put it on in London, the costs are about half as compared to New York. But now the dollar, I mean, the pound is below the dollar. Some days during the week, you know, I've seen the pound go
down. Is that right?
98 cents, you know.
I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it's basically the same as the Canadian dollar because we're getting, I think on Friday, we got $1.38 with our American dollars here, you know. So I think there's not much difference between what the exchange rate was between the pound and the Canadian dollar. I think they both decreased, you know, about the same amount.
Gotcha. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. What do you think about that? You know, the whole notion of, you know, I started hearing that the moment that coin was presented at Abundance 360 by Peter. He says, this is going to be the global exchange currency. The dollar, he says, you might as well put all of your dollars in the Bitcoin right now because Bitcoin is going to be
Peter, to his credit or whatever, was saying that in 2013, right? When we first went there. And he even gave us, if I remember, $50 of Bitcoin that required, of course, we open a wallet, open a account to have a wallet or whatever for it. But then I believe that it was at about $300 or $400 that in the time. But when you talk about the, as we're in the middle of this full migration to Cloudlandia as the one world order kind of thing, that's really where we're at, is that Cloudlandia is what the one world order is. And these individual currencies seem, you know, it seems a little outdated in a lot of ways, right? Like to be able to, and I think that we're looking of these, right? Like a regional, the euro, for example. And I think, boy, it's just gonna make sense when everything is all one unit, you know?
Why would you say that? Why would you say?
I mean, essentially it is anyway, right now.
Well, that's what the reserve currency means, that you have a currency.
What the dollar is.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I've studied this because I got interested in the claims. And first of all, it has to be backed up by an economy. I mean, I'm just defining what the reserve currency is here, you know. But essentially, it's fungible. It's the most fungible value on the planet. And by fungible, it means that anybody will accept it. There isn't
anything. Yeah, just by agreement. That's just by agreement.
Well, that's true of Bitcoin. That's true of Bitcoin. I mean, that's true of anything.
That's
all by all. And the other thing about it is that it's backed up by an actual economy that is the value of that economy, the performance of that economy doesn't have that much effect on the currency. So essentially, there's $2 in the world. There's the dollar as it's used in the United States, and there's the dollar where it's used outside of the United States. Okay, so there's no other country that's solid enough that the performance of the country wouldn't affect the value of the outside currency, only the dollar. And part of the reason is because it's number one. They say, well, why is it number one? I said, basically, because there has to be one that's number one, and it happens to be the one. But one of my friends here in Toronto, he's been in currency exchange, you know, in his financial services career and everything else. And he was just telling me that this was 6 months ago. He said, you know, every day, the amount of trade in the world is about $5.4 trillion. You know, if you take all the buying and selling for that day, it's $5.4 trillion. And he said you can pretty well multiply by the number of days in the year. So it's a lot, you know. He said, but 90% of it is in U.S. dollars. And he said, and so unless you have, it's one of those things, why does everybody use it? The reason why everybody uses it is because everybody uses it. And
it's going to be tough to overcome too. It's going to be like,
It's like English. People say, why is English the global language? And they said, well, because everybody uses it. But why does everybody use it? Basically because everybody uses it. So the thing is that all the value of the, and where we are in 2022, you know, and we're just at the very early stages of the virtual world. I mean,
Cloudlandia in the infancy, right?
Yeah, I mean, basically the beginning of the internet in the 90s, you know, that would be the,
I would
the
say
beginning.
That's like think that the 2007, when the iPhone was born, would have been the Mayflower. arriving.
It was almost like you had world maps then, because you could key everything to GPS. You know, everything had GPS, and you had satellite coverage. you had satellite coverage so that you could, you know, you could have that. But the thing is that the virtual world is valuable, but there's actually no value in it. Okay, I mean, I know they're talking about the metaverse and people buying property and Second Life and everything else, but that's just play money. You know, people create their little kingdom in that. It's not really translatable in the money world. So I think we'd have to go be, you know, we'd have to be in the future 40, 50 years because all the, Dean, you're the prophet of real estate. There's no real estate in the, you know, there's there isn't enough real estate in the virtual world to be convincing that you would base your currency value on it.
Right. Yeah, that hybrid, I mean, it's certainly, it's almost like a dilution or a multiplier, depending on which way you look at it. I heard, it might have been Joe Rogan was talking this podcast about VR and, you know, the virtual rooms kind of thing where it's not with the headpiece, but more like the holodeck in Star Trek kind of thing that you can experience that for US in the ring, like on the, you know, in the corner of the ring, watching and experiencing the fight there from a 3D camera on one of the corner posts of the ring. And mm-hmm. that they have other outposts, like you can sit in the crowd, you can sit on the, you toggle, switch to the view of being right there in the ring. And, you know, you think, that reminded me of when, I forget who was speaking at Abundant at A360 about the immersive concerts and football experiences where they're, you know, you can envision a future where they're selling season tickets, so season virtual tickets to the Browns, where your season ticket is a helmet, a Browns helmet that you can put on and sit right on the field or right anywhere that you want. And in the, you know, there's only one, you know, there's only one seat that is on the 50-yard line on in the front row on the field. In theory, you could have, it's a multiplier in that you could have one camera in that seat and have a million people with that same position. And that was something when in Fortnite, when they had a big concert and Marshmello, this artist, had 10 million people in Fortnite. I saw a not a documentary, but like a docu video about how they did it. And there's actually, you know, feels like there's only 100 people around you there because you're in the, right up by the stage, but mm-hmm. they stacked all of those as blocks. You're essentially had 10 million people all had that same experience of being there with 100 people, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. You know, the place where I'm seeing it make great headway, and I think that this would be probably true historically of technological advances, is in weaponry. And so the Americans have the new fighter, the F-35. It's really, I mean, apparently those who have had experience with it or know pilots, it's really quite an extraordinary plane because it's basically flown with the pilot's eyes. Okay, so the
self-driving, yeah.
So the, but they fly them in groups of six, and all six are six pilots, six planes are linked into a single unit, you know, and they, and they have, I think combining all of their sensing range, they have a 500 mile radius where they're picking up anything that's within 500 miles of the six plane collective and everything like that. And, but they work together, you know, they work together. I mean, they train together and the electronics holds everything together, you know, so it's a AI program that basically holds everything together. but they can see each other as if they are not in a plane. They can see each other as if they're just sitting and flying through space. They can see the other.
Wow.
The other, you know, and that's simulated, of course. They can't see that. But, you know,
I saw something about that. There's no windows in the plane. It's all cameras. And
Yeah. And the artillery now, I mean, a particular weapon that's being used by the Ukrainians, American-made weapon, it's called the HIMAR, high-intensity munitions that, goes up your ass. I was just trying to find some words to fill in.
That's
the rest
a technical.
Of the acronym.
That's the scientific term for it. Yes. The rectal ranger, right?
Exactly. Yeah, the rectal ranger. But anyway, the way it works is actually that the rockets that they use are on a truck. Okay, so it's like, you know, it'd be like a really big garbage truck, you know, or a cement truck, where they can rotate the rockets up, you know, and circle the rockets, but it's all a unit on the back. And so that's one component is the truck. And then they have three leaders. They have a driver and they have somebody who's just, you know, watching the terrain. And the third person is the rocket launcher and he's in the middle. But there's a American AWACS plane flying 200 miles outside of combat territory. So they're not in Ukraine. They're not in Russia. They're just flying on the Black Sea. And they have AI programs that can sense the cell phone numbers of Russian officers.
Okay. Unbelievable.
So what happened very early in the war is that on almost like the first or second day, all the encryption codes that unified the officer corps of the Russians was destroyed by the Ukrainians. They destroyed it. And so they have to use their personal cell phone numbers. And the U.S. has every one of their personal cell phones. And so what they do, the AI program is just looking where there's about a dozen of the cell phones in a close proximity. And then the plane itself, the American plane, logs in the six rockets on the truck and then sends the signal to the rocketeer on the truck. And he'll just send one of the six rockets. They have six and he sends one of them. And it can hit a dime from 50 miles off. So if the target is to hit a dime, they can hit a market. But what it's done is it's totally interfered with the decision making of the Russian officers because they can't afford to be in proximity with each other, and probably puts a real kink in their drinking habits, you know, when you think about it. If you take it a little further, you'd have to drink at a distance, which seems to defeat a lot of the pleasure.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. But anyway, and then the other thing is that they're almost more demoralized than the troops because they know they're being watched all the time and they have to think about the fact they're being watched, not think about their mission and everything like that. But if you put the three things together, it's almost like they've created a virtual world, you know, of picking up on cell phones, AI detecting where the distance is. The plane can't be seen. You know, I mean, it's at 50,000 feet and it's 200 miles away, but it's got a direct connection to this truck, and the truck, the moment it fires a rocket, it immediately moves to another place because the Russians have detection equipment where they can see where there's been a rocket launch, and they'll send a rocket there, but by the time their rocket comes, the truck is long gone. And then they have cargo trucks that have, I think, 10 of these six-packs, and they'd go along during the day. They hide under trees and they'll drop off a six pack here And then when the rocket truck has used their six pack, they just drive there and they get a new six pack. Yeah. So, but it's very interesting there. I mean, it's real world. This is all happening in the mainland, but it's using enormous Cloudlandia capabilities to.
I think that reminds me of the whole, you know, what Peter Diamandis is sharing or introduced, that idea of the AI, you know, the chess champions, that it's not the pure, it's not just AI that's the best chess players, it's the combination. And I think that's what, I think Cloudlandia enabled mainland achievement is the...
Well, the chess AI can create new moves that have never been done before.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't have intuition.
Yeah. And that's when humans can put together new chess moves. You know, I mean, using that metaphorically, I mean, what they're doing in the Ukraine is a new chess move, you know, that hadn't been done before.
It constantly amazes me, that kind of thinking even that leads to that, you know?
Yeah. That was my little book, my last little book, You Are Not a Computer, but it's really...
I haven't read it yet. I got it just last week, right before we did our virtual workshop. Yeah. So it's on my list here.
Yeah. Yeah, and the big thing is that it's a bit like the trick that they tried to do with global warming, that basically there's a correlation between CO2 increases and global warming. And they said, therefore, global warming is triggered by increases of CO2, which is increased by, you know, which is increased by human activity on the planet, you know, even though car farts are a way bigger issue.
Yes, exactly. Oh, that's so funny.
You really gotta zero in on the cow farts here if you really talk about CO2. That's methane. That's not even CO2. That's methane. But anyway, so that what they get you locked in, oh yes, CO2 global warming, CO2 global warming. Well, in the case of and I've watched the lock in about your intelligence and human intelligence ever since I started going to A360, and it always is, computers are information processors. Humans are information processors. So they did this little switcheroo where, you know, computers do exactly what humans do, but now we have the ability to do it at a much higher speed. And since human information is what we call intelligence, therefore, much faster computers are more intelligent than human beings. The only problem with that is we're not information processors. We're actually really shitty information processors. We seldom get it right, and that's our strength. The fact is that we're really shitty at processing information, but what we are superb is taking any information and creating new meaning out of it.
Yeah, and making connections, right, exactly.
Yeah, comparisons. Yeah. So you take away the information processing, you know, a correlation, and just means that computers do what computers do and humans do what they do. And probably if you can create teamwork between what computers do and what humans do, you get a bigger result.
I love it. So what was your big takeaways from the annual event?
Well, the two that, and one of them I knew, Dr. Tim Nelson, who is a stem cell scientist who has, for the first time, created a cure to weak heart muscles. So it comes under the category of congenital heart disease, newborn babies, and he has the ability simply by taking a cell from the baby's body, from the skin, they can create a stem cell soup, and that stem cell soup can be injected into the heart of the baby, and within a very short period of time, these cells go into the wall the muscles of the baby's heart, and they start pumping as they should, as they start. So they reintroduce the strength, or they introduce into the heart the strength that was there for some reason or other that they couldn't do it. Yeah. And so we saw him on the longevity trip in August, San Francisco and San Diego, and he came for the entire trip. So he traveled with us. And I got to know him, and a really neat guy, and then introduced him to Joe. And you know, your life changes when you introduce somebody's right. Life will change the moment you know that experience.
Yes, exactly.
I know that experience. So the last night we had dinner together, and Joe said, you know, can you come to my Genius Network event? So he came and he talked. But when he was on the trip where I met him, where Babs and I met him, early before Joe did, he had just gotten FDA approval, which is, you know, the gauntlet that all medical things have to go through. And so the previous Friday, he had gotten to fully experiment on 100 babies. You know, this is the last stage before full approval. And then he's been inventive for 20 years. He's in the Mayo Clinic, the system. And he's created lots of things. And so they had co-joint IP, but Mayo gave him all his IP back on Monday. So got FDA approval on Friday. And the following Monday, Mayo gave him all his stuff back with the agreement that royalties that he receives for his IP, 3% of it goes to them. So I think it's, you know, wow. I think it's smart on their part, and I think they're going to get well rewarded for it. So I talked to him about it. I said, you know, and he's got a really neat thing, and I'm not going to use the name here because I recommended that he put it in for IP, but he has a name, and it's a new way of thinking about innovation in medical science. I mean, what he's doing is brand new from a medical standpoint, but his concept about what he's doing is equally transforming. And I said, what you've done is that you're creating a whole new approach to medical science and healthcare, just in the way that you've gone about this. And then I introduced him to Keegan Caldwell, and Keegan is going to capture all this innovation for him, you know. So anyway, but then he said, well, I want to come into your program. And he says, I've talked to a whole bunch of people here, and they want. And I said, you're a nonprofit. And he says, yeah, our main company is main profit. And I says, you know, I won't even allow those two words to be said in the strategic culture.
Right.
Nonprofit. I mean, I'm sorry. I've had two near-death experiences with nonprofits. You know, I don't. You may have heard of it. It's called bankruptcy. So,
yeah. And,
I said, no, I don't. It's like retirement. I don't allow anyone to talk the word retirement and coach. And he said, no, but my IP company is profit making. I said, then you can come in. So he starts on December 13th in coach. But really great guy. And he just wowed the audience. And because, I mean, the particular medical trick he does is one thing, okay? But the way he has organized his research, he's organized his delivery system for this and everything else is revolutionary. So, and when we're together and we're not being, you know, not being recorded by the National Security Agency, I'll tell you.
Okay, perfect.
Yeah, I tell you what, or by the Communist Chinese Party. And anyway, and then the other one was B.J. Fogg.
Huh.
B.J. Fogg had this great little software that he's created where you create who your networks, your social networks are.
Yes.
And, you know, and I'm sure these things exist somewhere, but he's got a particular philosophy that goes along with it, which is great. So he asked if anybody wants to collaborate with him and applying to them. So I told them I'd be happy to do it with our free zone.
Yeah. You know, the interesting thing is he was, I thought that overlay of kind of Dunbar's circle is really a pretty interesting thing when you start to look at, it was only when he showed the comparison of maps that are three different, what do you call them, charts, graphs, maps, that you could start to recognize some, you could probably recognize some correlations there.
Yeah, and I read, you know, I turned him on. I actually spoke. I got up and I said, you know, there's a really great, you know, professorial cosmic twin that you have out there named Joe Henrich. And Joe is at Harvard and Notre Dame, and he's lots of other places. And I said that he says that, you know, that the reason why humans dominate all other species is because they developed a second kind of intelligence about a million years ago. That it goes back that far. And he says that we, at a certain point, learned that we can use our individual brains to access the brains of other people. And we can do this, you know, and we can do this, you know, with lots and
lots. I talk about that a lot. So I have a little book called Getting Referrals, and it's the secret psychology of why people refer. And that I refer to that as the cooperation game. And that's what it was when we started playing the cooperation game.
Yeah.
Then we really thrived as a species, and that allowed us to get up to a, you know, collective of 150 people. And that was like the optimal unit size. And so fitting
seems,
with our,
you know, it seems, I mean, it seems to be there's, it's not scientifically true, but it's one of those things. And it's experientially true in the sense that in the one of the things they use militarily, that you never have any unit that's bigger than 150. If you're coordinated and working together, 150 seems to be the level. And, you know, and but his point was at Harvard, not at Harvard, Stanford, this is B.J. Fogg. He and I just raised my hand and I said, you know, Stanford's one of the, you know, Stanford's one of the top-notch universities. But I notice in all cases, the universities and the high-tech industry are putting an emphasis on enhancing individual intelligence. And I said, I think it's a one-way blind alley. And because there is evidence that above a certain level of IQ, people's social intelligence falls off a cliff. You know, that, you know, that you got 180 intelligence, but, you know, you don't even know how to talk to other people. You don't pick up other people, you know, or you have a negative attitude towards other people. And I said, the real trick is to have a good enough brain, you know, you want a good enough brain, but then to use your brain to access the uniquely valued different brain abilities that other people have. Who not how? I guess who not how would be a good description of that.
Absolutely. And that's, I've heard or read different studies that have said the, you know, the practical, your best IQ level is about 125 to have of, because it's smart enough to be on the downslope of the bell curve on the far right, but not so far that you are unrelatable to the bulk of the bell curve, you know? It's kind of an interesting thing, being able to tap
into. Yeah, the practical, there's sort of a practical band that's 120 to 140. When you look at really effective leaders and really effective leaders, it's a 120. 140 band, you know, and you know the rule about IQ, don't you? That it's upgraded every 10 years.
And I didn't know that. I'll have to redo it. I did it.
A new 100 is established like every 10 years. You know, so, but 100 IQ today is much smarter than 100 IQ 100 years ago. Okay. And I mean, first of all, there wasn't any the IQ test 100 years ago. But yeah, mm-hmm. I think the Second World War, Wunderlich is, I think, actually the first one. Wunderlich, that was Kathy Colby's father. And I think that was developed for the U.S. military to sort out officers from non-officers.
When you have the access to, you know, when you think about smartphones now to being able to essentially access all the brains, on the network, that's really everything at your fingertips kind of thing. It's pretty interesting like that. So Luba's mother was visiting this last week, and she speaks Ukrainian and very little English. But there's with the translation tools now, it can literally, I can text in the words and push the button and it says them in perfect Ukrainian. And so you realize, I remember seeing at A360 the ear pod attachment software that you can literally speak the words and it's instantly translating and playing into their headphones, their ear pods, in their language, and they can reply in their language and it's translated into English. So you just think about the hours and hours of what it takes to learn another language that's gone. There's no practical need to learn another language now, you could argue, of course, the exercise of learning the language and of knowing the language
thing is,
and the nuances.
Languages are, the structure and the use of the language are different from each other, and I've never learned another modern language, but I've learned Greek and I've learned Latin, and Latin requires totally different areas of your brain than English does. So that as the world has gotten more in touch with each other, they've sort of rounded each other off. So it kind of means what this means, you get the gist of it, but it's not exactly that the emotions that are attached to the words are different and everything else. And one of the worries is that English is so dominant that everybody's learning, everybody's forgetting other languages or other languages aren't being used. What they find is that there's about 60 different English languages now. Around the world, but it uses a different language will use different parts of your brain. So there's a value, I don't believe that anything goes away, so there will be, we started off the hour today talking about, virtual currency or cryptocurrency. Mm-hmm. But they're just decades and decades away of having any value backing them up like a reserve currency in the, in the criteria. And so far, the greatest benefiters of crypto, especially Bitcoin, is the criminal element. Yeah.
Yeah. Out of sight. Out of, yeah.
Well, hard to track thing. Uh-huh. But if it's going to become real, it has to be absolutely trackable. But the other thing about it is that there's only one currency on the planet, because when you say, well, let's look at Canada has a currency, and I says, yes, but its value is determined in another currency. In other words, what's the Canadian dollar worth? Well, it's determined by, essentially there's only one currency and everything's a speculative investment compared to the main currency.
Yeah. And there's no real point of, there's no arbitrage now, really. It's tougher because it's so instantly reconcilable,
But yeah. I do love it, Dean.
I know.
I do.
I know.
So since 1989, the average has been $1.26. I love it.
Well, you've positioned yourself in the right way because you're getting,
80% of our revenue is in U.S. dollars and 80% of our expenses are in Canadian dollars. So,
Yeah. See, that's great.
Yeah.
You did it right.
Well, people say, how can you live up there with all the extra taxes? And I said, well, you know.
Basically nice, free. Yeah.
Nice quality of life. Yeah, nice quality yeah. of life. You know, people are polite and everything like that. But I said, there is the currency exchange makes a big difference.
Yes.
Yeah.
So
anyway. Smart. So to next week, I will be on the way to Nashville, Tennessee at this time. So
okay.
It'll be 2 weeks from now.
Here.
Unless you have something going.
No, I'll be here. I'll be here.
All
two
right.
weeks from today.
2 weeks from today.
That's right. Big breakthroughs that succeed us here. Big breakthroughs in the imagine if you applied yourself. Technology.
Yeah.
So that's something to look forward to there.
Yeah. But I'm no closer to respecting authority.
Right. Exactly. Nor should you be.
All right.
Okay, Dan. I'll talk to you soon.
Okay. Bye.